rise. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Halbrook, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you very, very much. Let's all be seated. All right. Thank you. Our first case this morning is the State of Minnesota versus Rick Morrell. As all counsel are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before we begin, we have recently updated our rules. Not sure all counsel are aware, but generally speaking, we don't allow cell phones to be on or used. So perhaps those of you in the gallery who are new to us, you can just sort of turn your cell phones off. And in case you're wondering, we do have audio recordings of our arguments, so you can get that, I think, even later today.
Within 24 hours.
So if you're thinking you might not be able to hear the whole argument, you can always get that online. And, there you go. All right, then, counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level. The podium goes up and down as well, and just tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
If I can just toy with this a bit to make sure
take
I
your
understand
time.
How it
Take your time.
This Take goes your time. Up and down. Proceed at this
please.
Time.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, counsel, your honors.
And I'm sorry, your name again?
My name is Joshua London.
Thank you.
L-O-N-D-O-N, just like the city.
Thank you.
And I'm here representing the appellant, Mr. Rick Morrell. And we're here today because Mr. Morrell's due process rights were violated when an unconstitutionally vague harassment restraining order served as the grounds for criminal charges. When an unconstitutionally vague statute is found to be vague, the criminal charges should be dismissed because it's overbroad.
What is the statute that you're citing in this instance?
Your Honor, I'm not citing a statute. I'm citing a series of opinions that follow this line of reasoning. A statute must be specific. If it's overly broad or unconstitutionally vague, an individual can't be expected to necessarily know what the parameters of that law are. And Minnesota courts, this court in fact, has found that the same reasoning applies to an unconstitutionally vague or I should say the same reasoning applies to a harassment restraining order. So, for example, in this case, the district court ordered that Mr. Morrell have no contact with his wife, except for a series of exceptions. And those exceptions include, and I'll be specific with the language because it's important. The language I'm referring to says except for marriage counseling, and there are four more exceptions included in that harassment restraining order, which the court has, and.
But that's the one you're focused on.
That is the important exception in this case.
So, Mr. London, you're basically saying the order is vague, not the statute.
That's correct, Your Honor. So, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's quite all right. Respondent argues that you didn't raise this issue below. I was wondering if you could respond to that argument, please.
I would be happy to, Your Honor, if I can go to my notes on that.
Thank you.
Portion of this. And it applies right here. Okay. All right. The appellant argues that he has sufficiently raised the constitutional issue of void for vagueness at the district court level because counsel at the time for the defendant argued that the behavior, the actions that Mr. Morrell took, Mr. Morrell's actions actually could be argued to fit within the language, the term marriage counseling. And that's because the...
No, Mr. Linden, I were you counsel below?
I was not, Your
okay,
Honor.
Okay, so we don't have... So you dodged that bullet. Here's the problem I have, speaking for myself and not the panel. Would it be fair to say that the harassment restraining hearing below, the words void for vagueness, due process clause, and constitution were never once mentioned during the hearing? Would that be a fair statement?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that's exactly fair to say, and that's because...
Well, okay, so those words were raised?
Well, Your Honor, in raising the issue that Mr. Morrell's behavior fits within...
Sure, no, I get that.
...the terms...
And I'm not... Well, actually, I am trying to be difficult. I understand your argument, would it be fair to say those words specifically were not mentioned at the hearing? Void for vagueness, due process clause, or constitution?
Your Honor, the word constitution was raised at the hearing to the extent that the argument was charges must be dismissed
for lack of probable cause,
which is in itself a constitutional challenge. But the only reasonable way for counsel at the district court level to raise the issue of void for vagueness in this case would be to say his behavior could fit within the language of the harassment restraining order exception. Because at the time...
I could say at the hearing, Your Honor, we're challenging this harassment order because it's unconstitutional, violates due process, and is void for vagueness.
Your Honor,
then it would clearly be raised.
That's very true. I believe that the decision to challenge it, to make the challenge to say the actions fit within the exception, are essentially the same. That is essentially the same thing, saying that because it could be interpreted as including these emails, and I'll go back to explaining those emails, because it could be interpreted to include that. That means that either the behavior was under the exception or it must, in essence, be unconstitutionally vague. So the language itself was not used, but I believe the language that was used and the challenge that was made was tantamount to challenging for vagueness. The emails that I'm referring to, and I'll do a brief recitation of what we're discussing here if the court would like.
We do have that in the record. We've read them.
Then I'll be very brief. So the emails, upon the order for harassment restraining order being put in place, prior to that order being put in place, I should say, the couple was seeing counselor. They continued shortly after to see that counselor, and then Mr. Morrell's wife decided she wasn't going to take part. Mr. Morrell continued to see that counselor, and his advice was, explain to her how you feel. So the interpretation that his counselor, who was the marriage counselor, told him how to help get the marriage, reconcile the marriage and reconcile their problems by giving that advice, it's very reasonable to expect that acting on his advice.
What you're suggesting is, normally the harassment restraining order prevents any contact between the petitioner and the respondent. In this case, the petitioner was your client's ex-wife, and obviously you're representing the ex-husband. And an exception that the judge wrote down is, well, they can have contact presumably for marriage counseling. Mm-hmm. And what you're arguing is that these series of emails back that your client sent to respondent falls within this exception.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, here's the issue I have, speaking for myself and not my cherished colleagues. Applying common sense, which is always dangerous here in appellate land, but applying common sense, I would argue that an exception for marriage counseling would mean, okay, they can both go in and see a marriage counselor, and even though they're in the same room, that would not violate the restraining order. That didn't occur here. I mean, clearly they were not together in the same room. And you're suggesting that these emails that were sent from your client to respondent come within that exception. What I did not see in those emails is, you know, sort of like, well, you know, our meeting is next Tuesday, you know, will you be there, you know, blah, blah, blah. What I did see was sort of just other conversations, which I'm not so sure I would interpret them as coming within the rubric of marriage counseling. So since that's the main concern I have, and I'm at least one vote, why don't you explain to me how those emails sort of come within that rubric?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question, because that brings me to a point that I wanted to make next. If you look at the order, which is in the record, the harassment restraining order, and direct your attention to the exceptions, where it says respondent shall have no contact with petitioner Carrie Lee Morrell, except as follows, and the letter A is counseling, the very first, marriage counseling, the very first letter. Now, if you go on further, the other exceptions include more specificity. The letter B says, email communications for the purpose of coordinating parenting time and addressing any financial matters.
Attendance. I would not argue that any of these emails come under that exception.
Of course not. What I'm saying is, looking at these other exceptions, there is a level of specificity that isn't included in the first exception, marriage counseling, and I think that would lead somebody to believe that there's a broad interpretation of marriage counseling should be taken. And when the person who is the marriage counselor advises that some course of action would benefit the marriage and would be good for the course of the marriage, I believe that if somebody who wants to get their marriage back together and who's looking at this counselor as their marriage counselor would certainly consider that under that broad interpretation.
But Pastor Westerberg was very clear in saying that he would never give advice to a pastoral client that would be in violation of a court order, correct?
What the pastor stated was that he couldn't recall whether he had, in fact, given that instruction, but if he knew about a harassment restraining order, he would not.
Right.
Right, and he did say that, but he didn't say specifically that he knew that a harassment restraining order was issued on a certain date and that he, after that date, never advised not to write an email. And if he had advised to write emails prior to the harassment restraining order and didn't tell him stop writing emails, there are many circumstances under which Mr. Morrell could have written these emails, understanding them to be at the advice of his counselor, because maybe they were given earlier because of any set of circumstances that, you know, right now I can't speak on, and I don't want to make up circumstances and say that I know. But it's his counselor, it's his marriage counselor.
Well, it just seems to me you're trying to justify the email exchange based on the fact that he continued to be in counseling with his pastor.
Well, Your Honor, I do think to a large extent it justifies the emails because he is a counselor who was their marriage counselor.
But at that time, respondent was not in counseling with her former husband.
The respondent, that's correct. The respondent had stopped going to the counselor. Mr. Morrell, however, was going to the counselor, and to a very large extent, that was the focus of their appointments and their meetings was his marriage falling apart and his desire to keep the marriage together. As you can see from the content of those emails, his main primary focus and his primary desire was to keep that marriage together. It wasn't to instill any fear or make any threats or anything like that. Nothing but romantic's the wrong term, but statements that emphasize his desire to reconcile the marriage and fix whatever problems do exist. And it does seem like the type of language somebody would use in trying to reconcile those type of circumstances.
Can I ask you? I wanted to follow up on that, maybe wading in this dangerous land of common sense, looking at that phrase. If I understand correctly, looking at those emails, what your client wants to extrapolate from marriage counseling is that having gone independently to a marriage counselor who gave him some suggestions, allegedly, there's a dispute about that, he took upon himself to do his own marriage counseling via encouraging her to resurrect the marriage. And so he's reading marriage counseling as an exception, not to go to a third party, but I can give marriage counseling?
Your Honor, if you might clarify the question, I guess.
What I'm trying to understand is he believes it's vague because that exception allows him to marriage counsel. He's talked to a counselor, mm-hmm. not with her, which would have been allowed under the order, presumably. But because, if I understand correctly, the advice of the counselors, you need to win her back, and that's in dispute, I understand factually, he believes it's appropriate for him to win her back, even though there's no exception for winning her back. It's marriage counseling.
I believe what he thought, and what he thought, in fact, not I believe, what he thought, in fact, was that his counselor was their marriage counselor, and he was going to that counselor to continue marriage counseling, even though she wasn't present. His desire was ultimately to figure out what he could do to
but
get her back.
But that's not the violation alleged. It's the email. The point being is that
correct.
He believes he could become the counselor, take the information, and then talk to her about things the counselor had suggested, and he believes that fits into those two words, exception, marriage counseling.
Well, Your Honor, I think he did believe that he was acting within the exception. He did believe that exception must include him acting on whatever instruction his counselor gave him, because in his mind that was his marriage counselor. And the important thing is that because the order is vague, it simply can't act as the grounds for a criminal complaint. It can't act as a ground for a criminal charge, because there are any number of interpretations of the term just marriage counseling. His interpretation.
Thank you, Mr. London. Your time is up. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We'll now hear from counsel for the state of Minnesota, please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Annalise Backstrom, Assistant Isani County Attorney, here on behalf of Respondent, the State of Minnesota. This is a case about a marriage that failed. Things got so bad that appellant's ex-wife had to obtain a harassment restraining order against appellant. Appellant chose not to follow it, and we're here today because appellant is trying to excuse his unlawful conduct by arguing that the marriage counseling exception to the harassment restraining order was unconstitutionally vague. This court should find in favor of the respondent for two reasons. One, the constitutional issue of vagueness was not sufficiently raised at the district court level to preserve the issue for appeal. And two, the marriage counseling exception to the harassment restraining order was not unconstitutionally vague.
Ms. Backstrom, were you counsel at the hearing below?
I was, Your Honor.
Was the word constitution ever mentioned?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Constitution, due process, vagueness, none of those things were mentioned below. Appellant argued at that hearing, at the contested omnibus hearing, that his conduct fell under the marriage counseling exception, not that the marriage counseling exception was unconstitutionally vague. Those things are very different. At that hearing, he was arguing that his emails clearly fell under the exception, and now we're here today, and he's arguing that that exception is unclear. This can be compared to a case, Roe v. State, where at Omnibus, defense counsel had argued that police lacked probable cause to arrest the defendant. They never asserted that it was involved a warrantless or improper entry into the defendant's home, but they tried to raise that issue on appeal. This court held that that issue was not sufficiently raised in district court. The same can be said here. The appellant moved to dismiss for lack of probable cause. No due process or constitutional challenge was raised below.
There was some discussion at the hearing about the vagueness of this term marriage counseling.
There was some discussion at the, the questioning of the court, I would say, brought up how this should be interpreted.
I mean, the court even asked you whether or not there was some ambiguity to the term.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would say there's unconstitutional as applied and unconstitutional on its face. And there was no argument that this order was unconstitutional on its face, that it was so vague that no one could reasonably understand what it meant. Simply, we were discussing what it could mean under the circumstances of this case. And I think that the court determined that through our discussion. And I would say, even though there was discussion about what it means, they're not the same thing as a vagueness challenge. If the court finds that that issue was sufficiently raised below, the marriage counseling exception of the harassment restraining order was not unconstitutionally vague. The topics, as Mr. London stated, the topics in the harassment restraining order were delineated clearly A through E, I think, and the exceptions, I should say. And marriage counseling was a standalone, and then there was another that said emails for the purpose of such and such, and then another one, communication for the purpose of such and such. Now, contrary to what appellant is arguing, our position is that because that marriage counseling was standalone, intent can be inferred that that was to mean that they could have contact at marriage counseling. Otherwise, if they were, if the intention was that contact about marriage counseling be allowed, it would have been included with communication about marriage counseling or marriage counseling contact at or about marriage counseling. In addition, at the hearing below, where the parties they actually stipulated to these terms, and at the hearing, when Ms. Morrell's attorney was giving those terms to the court, she said, marriage counseling if the parties so choose. Well, that leads us to believe that the intent of the parties was if the parties chose to resume marriage counseling, they could have contact at marriage counseling. They were not in marriage counseling at the time that these emails were sent. They were not in marriage counseling at the time that the harassment restraining order was issued. They ceased attending marriage counseling in 2016, is my understanding.
Ms. Backstrom, would it be safe to say that there was no dispute that the email, and we've seen those, and the jury saw those, there was nothing threatening about it or anything of that nature, but simply a stated desire that he had to resurrect the marriage?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor, but being threatening in nature is not required to violate the harassment restraining order. Those emails were exactly what that harassment restraining order was meant to protect. Ms. Morrell did not wish to reconcile the relationship. She did not wish to have contact of that nature with appellant. And to find that those emails were within the purview of those exceptions would basically make that harassment restraining order pointless, if you will.
And I'm assuming then it was argued by appellant either through cross-examination or direct or his own testimony if he testified into arguments to the jury that very issue, and the state made the point you're just making right now, and the jury simply made its decision based on that exception.
Yes, Your Honor, and I mean I recall cross-examining appellant, and There was no dispute that they weren't in marriage counseling at the time. There was no dispute that Ms. Morrell didn't really have the same want to work on things as he did. It was just simply argued that his pastor or counselor told him, suggested that he try to win her back, and these fell under the marriage counseling exception. But that is just simply not reasonable.
If he had sent her an email saying, are you interested in marriage counseling? And that's all it said. Would that have violated the harassment restraining order?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so, because our position is also, I think the most reasonable interpretation of that exception would be contact at marriage counseling. But I think it's also reasonable for it to be looked at as contact about marriage counseling. But neither of those things happened here. As this court stated, none of those emails talked about, would you want to attend marriage counseling? Can we set up an appointment? Nothing of that nature. And marriage counseling itself, I think, it can be said that it's a commonly understood term. That marriage counseling is when two people, a couple, go to counseling to work on their marriage. Now, when appellant was going to counseling on his own, I would say that's called individual counseling. And maybe he was receiving individual counseling from his pastor about his failing marriage. But that is not marriage counseling. Just as in State v. Bussman, it's discussed that the terms at issue had acquired a reasonably definite meaning, so has marriage counseling. And marriage counseling, I would say, has sufficient definiteness that ordinary people would be able to understand what it means. And no reasonable person could inadvertently violate this harassment restraining order as it's written because of an inability to determine what type of conduct is prohibited or allowed. And to address the argument that the pastor or counselor had told Mr. Morrell to try to woo her back, I would say, as the court also stated, there's some controversy on that, whether he actually said that or not. But if he did, it is appellant's job, it's his responsibility to follow the terms of that harassment restraining order. And if we were to interpret that harassment restraining order to allow appellant to contact Ms. Morrell whenever he wanted to talk about how he loved her and he wanted to work on their relationship, I mean, then basically we're opening the door to say, well, if the pastor or counselor told him, you know, go home and try to see if things work that way, that would be okay too. And that's taking it too far. Appellant is trying to use the marriage counseling exception to the harassment restraining order as an excuse for his unlawful conduct.
Was Pastor Westerberg's advice to Mr. Morrell part of his theory at trial? Was that presented to the jury?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And I had Pastor Westerberg testified as well, and there was no direct admission that he definitely said that to him. He said, I might have, but I would never have told him to violate a harassment restraining order. The only logical meanings that can be understood from the exception marriage counseling would be contact at or about marriage counseling. And neither of those things happened in this case. That exception is not void for vagueness. It is still narrow enough that a reasonable person using common sense would be able to understand whether or not certain conduct is prohibited. And because of that, Mr. Morrell's due process rights were not violated. The vagueness doctrine, there was some discussion about it being too broad, too flexible. The vagueness doctrine does not preclude something to be broad and flexible. That's in State v. Kuluvar. A statute or an order in this case would only be unconstitutionally vague and invalid if a subject could not determine with reasonable certainty whether or not a particular act was forbidden or permitted. And in this situation, Your Honors, marriage counseling was clear enough that appellant could understand reasonably that his emails did not fall within that exception. The issue was not sufficiently raised below the unconstitutional vagueness issue, but if this court disagrees, the marriage counseling exception to the harassment restraining order was not unconstitutionally vague, and therefore Mr. Morrell's due process rights were not violated. Respondent respectfully requests that this court affirm the order of the district court in its entirety. If there aren't any further questions, I'll yield the balance of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Backstrom.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. London, you'll have the last word, sir.
If I could just have one moment.
Yes, take your time, please.
Thank you. May it please the court again, counsel. Your honors, I would only like to re-raise a couple issues to clarify some things. Most importantly, I want to point out that the district court at the hearing when defense counsel filed a motion to dismiss, the district court acknowledged the intended meaning was not comprehensible. The district court stated specifically that the language could include the need to be able to communicate in counseling, to set up counseling, to talk about what they discussed, and lists a number of potential interpretations of the language.
What page are you referring to in the transcript?
Your Honor, it is, I have it right here in just a moment. Sorry, Your Honor, I'm just going to have to bring that up. Page 26 of the contested omnibus transcript.
Well, he doesn't say it's incomprehensible there. The court says that it could be read to include trying to make arrangements for marriage counseling.
Correct, and I didn't mean to say that was part of the quote, but I believe the implication is that you can't comprehend the extent of that exception because there are all these other possibilities where perhaps there could be, he could be said to have violated if they communicated about setting up marriage counseling or if they discussed what they discussed after. There's no parameter set on that, wherein exceptions to...
That example there, wasn't there only two? The prosecutor mentioned, and she mentioned here today, during marriage counseling sessions, and then the judge goes on, wouldn't it be reasonable for me to read into this definition that they need to be able to communicate to set up marriage counseling. So really, is that only two potential options, neither of which, as the state argued to the jury, was present in these email?
That's true that he only mentions two. But he mentions only two. He doesn't say that it's limited to those two. And the issue that raises is that the judge is stating that it's not clear exactly what the perimeters, how far that exception extends, whereas if you look at the exceptions 2 through 4, it's plain to see that in exception 2 through 4, it says, it mentions the means of communication. It mentions the, it mentions more specifics, and for the sake of time, I'm not going to look for that at this time, but it does say communication by phone for certain things, and exception number 1 is completely void of any specifics to give the defendant and the respondent, the respondent, Ms. Morell, any idea of how far this exception is meant to apply?
Ultimately, Mr. Lund, didn't the district court decide that the meaning of marriage counseling in this exception was a fact question for the jury to determine?
That is correct.
I know that he was encouraged to find a definition as a matter of law, but he did not do that. Correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, and that was the court's finding.
What is our standard of review to review this matter?
The standard of review to determine whether
that was error or not.
It's a matter, I believe it's a matter of plain error. So it's a matter of whether...
Might be clearly erroneous, though.
Your Honor, I apologize offhand. I clearly erroneous sounds right if Your Honor is stating that, but I'm sorry.
11 years here, I finally got it right.
I appreciate the assist there, and I just... With the short amount of time I have remaining, I want to point out just a couple of things to conclude. That there are ways that this could have been clearly defined. It wasn't, and because it wasn't clearly defined, it's vague enough that he didn't have the guidance necessary. And because it's vague, it has to be void for vagueness, the same way a statute would be if a statute were void for vagueness, and therefore it can't act as the grounds for a criminal complaint. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. London. Thank you, Ms. Backstrom. The matter is submitted. Our next